everybody, and welcome to episode 223 of Magic the Amateuring, a show for people who are new to Magic, veterans returning to the game, or anybody who likes to have bubbles rise from their tummy slash laugh center. Hello, I'm one of your hosts, Maria, and our other host, Megan, is not with us tonight because she is not feeling well. So we're going to have a very special guest filling in for Megan. You can tweet at MTAcast if you'd like to send Megan get well messages. I know she would appreciate it. So it'll just be me and a guest hanging out and talking some magic today. Before we start the show, you know the drill. We've got some people to thank, and those people are you. That's right. I'm looking at you. I'm staring into your soul and saying thank you. And if you're only listening to this on iTunes, Stitcher, you know, our website, the Patreon website, whatever you're listening to, I'm coming in your ears. I'm coming in strong and I'm coming in hot. And I'm telling you, thank you for being a supporter of Magic the Amateuring. I'm being a little silly, but it really means the absolute world to us. I want to say thank you to everybody who became a new patron last month and everyone who will become a new member of our Less Than 1% Club coming up this month. Of course, you get awesome rewards for becoming a member, even at the $1 an episode level. And you get our unending gratitude, as well as access to our Discord chat, chance to win awesome cards and swag and our monthly drawings, and just being part of basically the coolest club on earth, even though I can't say it, you're going to be part of it. The benefits are literally endless. Okay. I also have to say thank you to our sponsor, cardkingdom.com/MTAcast. Head over there to buy all of your cards that you'll need for the upcoming exciting standard season. The Pro Tour is coming up. I haven't really said this on the show yet, but I will be at the Pro Tour. I will be at the desk with Rich Hagen. So that's really super exciting for me. I'm just monumentously, I just invented that word because that's how excited I am to be at the PT. And I'm going to be commentating play-by-play at Richmond, Grand Prix Richmond, the weekend before, which is this weekend coming up. So I'm really excited to see what people are brewing and standard, what the pros bring to Nashville this time around for the Pro Tour. But if you want to be like the pros, if you want to be cool like the pros, or if you want to break the format before the pros, because who cares about stupid pros, cardkingdom.com/MTAcast is where to go to get all your cards for that. Or maybe you don't care about standard, you just want to draft. Get some packs there, man. Get some packs, some boxes, and play with your friends. It's the best place to go to buy Magic cards. They're super nice. And if you ask ever so nicely, they will include an MTAcast sticker in your order. You can always find us on youtube.com/MTAcast. Coming up in the very near future, we'll have a lot more videos released on that platform. So go hit subscribe. It really matters to us how many subscribers we have on the show today. We're going to talk standard corner, because let's be honest, it's new. We've got a cat ban. We lied to you last episode. Look, we didn't know we were lying, but apparently we were lying. One day we were not lying to you, and the next day we were. Felidar Guardian got banned. It's changing the face of standard. We're going to talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk about draft with our special guest who went to a draft camp, which is a really cool thing a lot of pro players do to prepare for the Pro Tour. We're going to talk about that experience. We're also going to have a Flavor Text Theater quiz and hear some awesome magic story time from inside the life of a player who I like to say is pretty good, although he'd like to say, I'm just okay. We'll see which one of us is right over the course of this show. It's just a standard corner with our special guest, Ben Seck. Everybody, welcome Ben to the program. Yay!
Hey everybody, how's it going?
You may remember Ben from our episode about GP San Jose, our pajama party episode, when we had a mini prothering with Ben, and we record the episode literally in our pajamas, and he serenaded us with some lovely violin playing. Have you gotten any offers from, like, the Met, you know, to come?
Well, you know, I mean, they were just pouring in, and I just had to, like, turn them all down. No, to be honest, there was nothing. I didn't know what happened here.
That's not true. There were several people who commented on YouTube that they liked it.
Well, you didn't tell me, so I'm just, like, totally in the dark about this stuff.
It was wonderful having you as a guest on that episode. You had some really hilarious stories to tell us and some really good insight, too. So I brought you here as a replacement, Megan. So I need you to act as much like Megan as you can throughout the episode. Can you do that for me?
Yeah, I mean, I really love control decks and countering stuff.
There you go.
Also, you know, other things that Megan likes.
Wow, spot on impression.
Yeah, look, I've been working on it like for at least 5 minutes.
So tell people your background, if this just briefly, if they haven't ever had the pleasure of knowing you before.
Yeah, okay. So I've been playing Magic for a long time. The first time I started playing Magic was right at the beginning. I actually played it when the set Legends came out, which is actually the first year of Magic. And I originally am from Australia. And so I played it like for the first 15 years of the Magic's existence while I lived in Australia. So it's kind of a bit of a unique take on it. In the last 12 years, actually, I've actually lived in America. I'm a game designer. I currently work for Disney. But Magic is basically responsible for all the good things in my life. I was actually able to get a job in America in game design, and like via just people I knew by playing the Pro Tour. And then the reason I actually was able to get into digital games was someone had seen my resume, had recognized me from some Magic coverage, and then gave me an interview. So I really have everything to thank for Magic, basically.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me and being my proto Megan on the show. And the first thing we're going to talk about is Standard. Like I mentioned, a lot of people really looking forward to the Standard season now that Felidar Guardian has been kicked out of the house, essentially, and said, yeah, never come back.
Gone to the kitty litter in the sky.
Yeah. So sad. What would heaven cats poop in? Just some nice soft clouds.
Yeah, that's right. There are clouds just for the angel kitties to poop in.
Oh, that's a lovely thought. Yeah. Well, that's where Felidar Guardian is. So the Shape of Standard, we got a little preview potentially of it. Star City Games had an open, and we've had a look at some of the 5-0 deck lists that have been posted on Magic Online. So top three, like SCG decks, Mardu Vehicles. So that deck's not going away, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone expected for it to go away. In fact, if anything, a lot of people predicted that there'd be more of it because it, you know, the Standard before Felidar Guardian got banned, it was two decks. It was Felidar Guardian combo and Mardu Vehicles. And so that was basically 100% of the field. But I think the hope was by R&D and the hope was by the community is that Felidar Guardian and that combo deck was actually suppressing a lot of other cool decks. And while Mardu Vehicles actually did really well, it's pretty traditional for the more established deck to do well early in the season. People are like have all the cards, so there's probably a lot of people with the deck. And people are used to it. It's a very tuned version of the deck. So there didn't need to be that many tweaks to it. Also, Armaket doesn't have that many artifacts. So there's not that much synergy from Armaket cards to Mardu Vehicles. So there wasn't that much changing to do. So ultimately, it's inevitably going to be one of the better decks in the format, if not the best deck in the format.
Still, do you think there's going to be something better?
Yeah, I actually think there's definitely going to be something better. And okay, probably good. The best deck building minds haven't even unleashed their favorite decks because like the Pro Tour is coming up. Like the pro players who are really, really good at deck building, they're holding their best stuff for the coming weeks.
Sorry, I just got a cat who jumped up on me. Say hi to the internet, kitty. Hi. Okay, down. Speaking of, he must have got really sad about that Felidar ban and felt like it needed to be held. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm sure Felidar Guardian like was, you know, he probably has the rookie card as the Felidar Guardian and he really wanted to get it signed, but unfortunately he missed the opportunity.
So talk to me a little bit about some of the other decks that we saw at Stargate City Games that weren't Mardu Vehicles, perhaps giving us a little look at some innovation that might be going on.
Yeah, so I mean, Mardu Vehicles made up 5 of the top 8, which is kind of unfortunate, but as I said before, not unexpected, and probably will change as time goes on. So the other deck in the top 4 that wasn't Mardu Vehicles was a white-red humans deck, and it really just took advantage of a lot of the human synergies that were there from kind of the Shadows of Innistrad block, but it had a couple new cards from Armenket, most notably Honored Crop Captain, which is that red-white aggro creature that's 3/2, and when she attacks, I think she gives the rest of the team plus one power. So that really, really good in like aggressive decks. And then taking a little bit of Kaladesh kind of technology, Metallic Mimic, which is kind of like a yet another way of pumping all your character, all your creatures. That's in the deck too. But then it's really just like a lot of aggressive 1 and 2 drops, a lot of 2/1s for 1. Also had the new Glory Bound Initiate with the
mechanic.
That card is a really, really good card, especially good with Always Watching. Always Watching is a great combo with Exert.
Is Always Watching in this deck?
Yes.
Okay, so, I can't see it, so I'm just I'm just asking. Yeah, so, I'm relying on you, because if you're, you know, a listener of the show, you know that my greatest dream is that Standard will include Glory Bound Initiate and Always Watching. And I thought it was going to be in a mono white shell, but perhaps not.
Yeah, I think the advantage of having like a little bit of red is in the honored Crop Captain. That it's just yet another anthem. But I think the Always Watching Glory Bound Initiate combo is really, really good at making sure that this aggressive deck can race very well. So because it's got lifelink, Exert doesn't cost anything with Always Watching in play. And that's a really, really kind of great combo that allows you to come from behind.
And there's a mono black deck in there as well, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there's an aggressive mono black deck.
Ooh.
It's really like it's so many one drops, and it has some really cool technology. So
I like how you call it technology. Like they've invented the microwave.
it's you know, it's like making Magic decks is kind of like innovating. It's kind of like research and R&D and things like that. You're looking for like things that haven't been put together. It's kind of like inventing things, and so technology may be a cool way of calling it.
I do like that word for it.
So it's the thing about this deck is kind of all out aggressive. It has cards that I've never seen in standard decks. It's got Night Market Lookout, which is a 1/1 from Kaladesh.
That drains when you tap it.
That's right. And I mean, that card was like, a lot of people didn't even like it in draft.
I never played it in draft, even when I had a lot of vehicles.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I like the aggressive decks in Kaladesh, but it wasn't really that well played. And then there's a couple other cards from Kaladesh, like Walking Ballista is really powerful, Glint Sleeve Siphoner to refill your hand. But the two new cards, the two really important cards that came from Armaket was Dread Wanderer, which is basically a black 2/1 that you could pay black and 2 to basically put it back into play if you had not many cards in hand, 1 or 2 cards in hand. And Bone Picker, which is a black and 3 bird, but if something had died, it's only 1 black.
Yeah, a lot of people were comparing that bird to Delver a little bit.
Whoa. I think it's a little bit kind of not as good as Delver. That being said, I think for standard, it is a really powerful like effect, really efficient creature. I mean, it's 3/2 for 1 black mana. It flies, it has death touch. It really just piles on the damage. And it's just basically all these like really quick creatures backed up with like what black is great at, which is like a lot of removal spells.
So I have a personal question for you. How dare you? Just kidding. My question is, if you could have any style of deck based around something that's happening in Armenket, what would your dream standard deck be if it came to fruition?
Let's see. I mean, my favorite card out of Armenket is Bounty of the Luxa. it's kind of a doodly card, but it's like so super dirtily fun. It's 1 green, 1 blue, and 2. It's an enchantment, and it's the design of the card is meant to kind of like mimic the flooding and the flooding of the Nile equivalent in Armenket. There's a river called the Luxor, And so on the first time you cast it, the first time, first upkeep you, after you cast it, you get to draw a card, and then you put a counter on it. And the next upkeep, you actually get three mana, and you take off the counter. So it kind of like waxes and wanes every
ebbs like and flows.
Turns. So it's a cool ramp card, and as well it draws you into some of your bombs that you actually want to ramp to.
So what would you ramp to in your Luxa River deck?
Ulamog, of course.
And there's like a lot of good, there's good ways to ramp in this set, so maybe it'll happen.
Yeah, I mean, actually, one of the decks we'll talk about later actually has Bounty of the Luxa. I don't know if it's going to be good enough to be on kind of a top tier standard. I hope so. I think it has the power level. It just kind of depends on whether there's a shell around it that's good enough.
Okay, so what other decks were notable that you wanted to talk about? Perhaps some of the 5-0 MTGO standard decks taking down some leagues, taking names. They came here to go 5-0 and chew bubblegum, and they're all out of bubblegum.
Well, I mean, I think one of the decks that gets a lot better because the cat is gone.
Because, let's talk about why that is, just really briefly. Like, what does banning Felidar Guardian do to open up standard, essentially? You don't have to be worried all the time, constantly stressed out that you're going to die to this combo?
Yeah, because, I mean, the problem with that deck is that basically once you hit five mana, there was always a chance that it was going to kind of jump at you and kill you in one turn. So
classic cat, am I right? That's what I worry about every night.
I mean, that's what cats do. They're just waiting and they're
waiting for murder.
And then when everything is dark or tapped out, bam, million cats. That's just how it works. But what it does is it kind of forces every deck not to tap out, because the best way to make sure that your opponent doesn't go for it, because there's a lot of removal spells for like cat, for Shaheeli. There's a lot of ways of interacting with it, but you can't do it until they actually start going for the combos. So, like, there's kind of like shock and other creature removal and things like that. But when you had to leave open mana all the time, like, just in fear of getting killed in one turn, basically the cat deck didn't have to worry about that. They could just play out their Rogue Refiners and, like, and Whirler Virtuosos and things like that. So you were living in fear, but they weren't living in fear against you. And so there's a lot of decks that basically couldn't get played because they had to tap out. I mean, and usually that meant losing to the cat deck.
Wow. Okay. So now we know why standard is opening up. So you can continue. I interrupted you about which deck you think got better with the banning of Guardian.
There's a kind of a class of decks that I'll just call Torrential Gearhawk decks, which I love. At GP Denver, I played a blue-red Torrential Gearhawk deck, and one of the 5-0 decks that on Moto actually was that kind of style of deck. And it gained so much from not having to worry about Felidar Guardian, but it also gained a ton. There's a lot of good control cards that came in Amaket. Sensor is a one blue and one counter spell, like it counters a spell unless they play one, which doesn't sound that great for one blue and one. But the important thing is it has a cycling cost of one blue, which means that when it becomes kind of like not that good or pretty useless, you can just get rid of it and draw another card. And that's really efficient.
Yeah, that sounds like my last relationship. You know what I mean?
Well, moving right along. And maybe talking about your last relationship.
I'm JK.
Super powerful card from Almanket called Pull From Tomorrow. It's blue X, draw X cards and discard one card. And so that's an instant, which is super important for the control decks because they don't want to tap out on their own turn. And it allows them to like just gas up again after kind of like casting all the counter spells and they're running low on resources. They can just like play this card, draw like a bunch of cards up again, and then be ready for for the next like battle. It's kind of like Sphinx's Revelation. It's obviously you don't get the life, but it has the same function in the deck. It basically allows you to come back after you've used all your resources.
So we could be seeing some more Torrential Gearhawk control, essentially. in Nashville.
And control really hasn't done, I mean, apart the cat deck was a bit of a control deck, but like true control decks, they haven't been big for a while. This one kind of represents that. It's cool that, like, you know, standard is becoming a little bit more normal. It doesn't have as many combo decks, has a little bit more control, aggro, kind of mid-range. What you want to do is a mixture of decks. You don't want any particular deck to be really dominant.
Are there any that other decks that happened to catch your eye?
Actually, one of the cooler decks that I saw that went 5-0 is actually a zombie deck. So yes. For all the zombie like lovers out there, there's a deck that literally is just zombies and zombies and zombies. And so it's black-white, which is great because that's the colors of zombies in Armaket. It has some of the old zombie cards that did well. It's like Cryptbreaker, Diagraph Colossus, and Relentless Dead and things like that. But it also has some of the new ones like Binding Mummy, Lord of the Accursed, Dread Wanderer. So these are all really like cool cards. And now there's a critical kind of like amount of zombies that kind of come together that really present a really good aggro threat to your opponent.
Who knew that Binding Mummy might end up in a standard deck? The little bear who could.
I mean, when you combo Binding Mummy with Dark Salvation, that's a lot of tapping. I mean, you can basically stop. You can't leave any amount of like creatures back. They'll just all get tapped.
Well, that excites me. I hope that's a real thing. I love tribal, and it would be really awesome to me to see a tribal deck get there because I've not yet been able to experience that in my Magic life. So, you know, I wasn't around when fairies were a thing or anything like that. So I'm waiting for the day. I feel like one day we're going to return to, what am I thinking of? We're going to return to Lorwyn. So that will happen again. But maybe before
that. Is
that
your favorite set, Lorwyn?
I never actually played it. I did have a Lorwyn common cube. That I drafted a few times. Where is that now that I think about it? Yeah. I'm not sure. But I do really like Lorwyn because I played with it in Modern Masters. A lot of those cards were Lorwyn. And I really liked it. And it's based on Welsh mythology. So that, you know, that gets me too. So I would say.
You like the Boggles.
Yeah, the Boggles came from it. Oh, yeah, we got to go back there, man. We got to go back there big time. That's my favorite. And I never got to play it. So I'm like kind of saying that I didn't play it, but I've kind of played it peripherally. So, yeah. Well,
I mean, are you excited to go to the Pro Tour and see some of these decks and like see a fresh kind of standard like metagame? Like what are you most excited to do in Nashville?
So, beyond just being able to be surrounded and be in that environment of the Pro Tour, which is wonderful in and of itself, because the excitement just in the room of all the best players in the world gathering together to compete for this huge prize, and there's lights, camera, action, all the rest of it, all of that is very exciting. But I really do love to see the innovation. I love to see players getting really excited about their new brew or thinking, oh, our team really did it. We really broke the format, or we think we did, or maybe we think we did and we actually didn't. And that's okay too, because that's exciting, right? You get to see, oh, could this deck make it? No, it crashed and burned. Well, we'll try again next time. I love to see that. And of course, I am just dying to see the drafting at the Pro Tour as well, which is always my favorite part personally. So, I just love sitting down for that first draft of the day and just watching whoever we're featuring in the draft take their first pick and their second and their third. And you say to yourself, huh. All right, so this is how I'm supposed to draft this. I've been doing things all wrong. I love those two aspects of it. It's all new. Everybody's excited. The energy in the room is fantastic. And I get a pretty good seat to see what's going on. So I couldn't be more excited, really. Oh, and you're going to be playing GP Richmond. So are you excited to play some sealed and draft on day two, potentially?
I always try and make time for the first limited Grand Prix of the season. I mean, they always have one right the week after basically release. And I always try and make time to travel to wherever it is. I mean, I'm in San Francisco. Richmond is literally on the other side of the country, and it is totally worth it. I mean, and it's actually a little bit even more exciting because on Magic Online, they released the set earlier, and so I feel like I've played the set and I'm kind of almost used to the set a little bit more. I think I know most of the cards. I played a lot of the deck strategies. I think I'm pretty well prepared, and it's a new set. And so, like, I always, there's nothing better than, you know, waking up in the morning and cracking some new booster packs.
I agree. Speaking of limited, let's talk limited. Amonkhet Draft. All right, we're coming up on the Pro Tour. As we've mentioned, we're coming up on GP Richmond. We're coming up on you, wherever you are, probably going to draft night at your LGS or firing up Magic Online to play some draft. So let's talk about what we know, what we like, what's great in the format, what's terrible. Have we made any super sweet decks? What are we thinking? How are we feeling? So I'm going to start with a question for you, Ben. You went to a draft camp this past weekend.
Like, yeah, so my parents wanted me to the house, so they sent me off to camp.
You packed your bag with your socks, right, that which are labeled with your name and that's your right bug spray. Okay.
That's right.
Okay, that they, sounds
they
great.
They packed up some snacks and said, okay, you go enjoy yourself at draft camp.
You know what? No. I would say this is real. Say you could go for a weekend and stay in a cabin with a lake and you could just like play magic drafts all weekend in nature. And then at night you had campfires and made s'mores. I'm in.
That's what happens.
Oh, it sounds so magical.
it's all that happens except for the campfires, except for the s'mores. But there's a lot of drafting.
Well, that's good enough for me, I suppose.
So draft camp is just something that's kind of arisen from a lot of the teams, like the Magic Pro teams, basically needing to have a lot of preparation in a short amount of time to get ready for the Pro Tour. And so what they do is they all get together. They like, there's actually several. I know of probably half.
There's a pretty famous one in Madison.
Yeah, there's one in Madison. I know there's one in DC. I know there's one in like Southern California, and there's actually one up in the Bay Area. And so I met the acquaintance of some of the players in the Bay Area, some of the pro players, especially some of them from the Mass Drop West team. And they invited me. I mean, even though I'm not qualified for Nashville, they, you know, thought that I wasn't too bad enough to basically, like, you know, act as one of the guys that plays draft. And draft camp is interesting because it, you know, it sounds fun. I mean, you just draft all day, but it's also, there's kind of a serious element of it. And so the reason they do it is to get a lot of information about the draft format, you know, what colors and styles are doing well. And actually, one of the things they do is all the draft camps, at least three of them, actually pull all their data together, put it into a spreadsheet, and then have all these percentages about what strategies are going well and what's not going well, and, you know, whether this card or this rare or this combination is just doing well. And so it's really kind of methodical, even though you're obviously having fun. I mean, you're drafting, so how bad could it be? But actually, I attended one day of draft camps because it was usually 2 days, but I only went on the Monday, on the Saturday. And we went, like, it started at 10 a.m., finished at 8 p.m.,
oh,
and we did five drafts.
Wow!
So it was fun.
That's a lot of pack wrappers. You could make a dress out of that, probably.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of brick counters everywhere. A lot of exert tokens. It was like the whole table was a total.
Looks like a magic tornado just came through. Forget Sharknado. Magnado. That
Card-nado
doesn't sound right. Cardnado. Okay, that sounds much better. Don't ever hire me to title a movie. Let it be known. Oh.
But the good thing about like doing draft camp is that you can try different things. You can like
experiment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're obviously trying to play a little bit hard. Like you want to make sure that you're getting good good games in and good kind of data and experience in. But also you can try some of the weirder strategies. And in fact, I drafted obviously five drafts, and no two decks had the same color combination. I actually tried to make sure that I tried like each one at least a little bit different, and it allowed me to get a lot of, like, I think I played against nearly every combination too. So, you know, you get a really good sense of like, okay, this is what this deck is about. This is what this deck is about. So, you know that blue-red is about spells and blue-black. I mean, you can look at the cards and understand that, but you can understand which are the more important ones for each strategy.
Do you have a pet deck in this format yet? A deck that you personally just really like to play that's really fun for you?
I mean, my favorite deck in the format is blue-red. Blue-red spells, but it's also kind of a cycling deck. The card that you know, and it's pretty obvious that you want a Windmill Slam if you see it in your pack, is like Drakehaven.
Yes! I drafted a Drakehaven deck the other night.
And how'd it go?
Terrible. Just terrible. I think it was because I was relying too heavily on Drakehaven as my only win condition, somehow. Yeah. Like, I needed more of that silly, the Aven Initiate, the 3-2 flyer, which is cycling for two. No, wait, it has Embalm. But what am I thinking of? Shimmer Scale Drake, 3-4 cycling for two. That kind of stuff, just to give me some inevitability besides my stupid little Drakes, which at some point became outclassed.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of those decks, you got to know what's the important cards that make you want to play the deck. I mean, Drakehaven is one of those decks. Enigma Drake is another one of those decks. It's cards. I think the reason why I like blue-red is that a lot of the cards that...
Wait, what's Enigma Drake do?
It's a red and blue and one. It's for a 0/4 flyer.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then it has power equal to the number of instants and sorceries in your graveyard.
Okay.
So it basically starts off a little bit, you know, like a tiny Drake, and then really can get really big in the late game. And if you have a lot of spells in your deck and blue-red is really about like that, and you can get them anywhere, you can cycle them, which is actually why it has a really good synergy with that strategy. Also, just cast them, use your removal spells, electrify, and magma spray and stuff like that. That'll deal with it. But blue red is, I think, it's just really good because of the amount of cycling. You actually see the best cards in your deck a lot because cycling just naturally draws you more cards, naturally gets you the best cards in your deck.
I drafted in the standard, the streamer showdown the other day, black, white, and it was essentially cat zombies. So it was all cats and all zombies. It was more heavily weighted to all cats until Eric Froelich noticed that and told me to take out all of my sacred cats. I had five of them or four or something ridiculous like that. And I had Regal Caracal, so I was like, I'm doing it. I'm just going to do it. And he was like, how about you maybe have a good deck? And so I focused on my zombie sub theme because I had Liliana's Mastery, which gives you some zombies and pumps your zombie team, as well as, I believe, a Lord of the Accursed, which is a zombie lord and that sort of thing. I thought the deck was really sweet. It ended up playing not very well. I only had one win in the streamer showdown, but maybe that's chalked up more to my skill than the deck's power. I'm not sure.
I mean, I saw your deck. I thought the deck was actually really good. And to be honest, I mean, I think you got a little bit unlucky. The decks that beat you were really good. So I don't think it was as much a problem with your deck as a problem with the opponent's decks being really good. I think the card pool in that draft was just like particularly good. And you kind of, you know, you did well in one. And I don't think it was that crazy to, you know, go 1-2 when your opponent's decks were that good.
Well, thank you for saying that. Do you think that you can draft or should draft multiple colors in this format?
Oh, I think you nearly always will draft two colors. I mean,
I guess I mean three plus.
So I would say that there is one deck that is always or very, very often three. The blue-green deck often splashes a third color, mainly because it's the slower of the green decks. And there's actually quite a reasonable amount of fixing. There's...
as long as you're in green.
Right, yeah. So it's but a lot of the green decks are kind of fast. The green-white deck, the green-red deck, even the green-black deck to some extent, they're very creature-based, very kind of curve-based. The green-blue deck is about ramping. It's about like kind of casting these really, really expensive, powerful cards. Most notably, like there's a
Bounty of the Luxa. Just kidding.
Yes, But one of the cards that really can't go in any deck except this deck is the Sandworm Convergence.
Yes. You
love that card.
I love Sandworm Convergence, and I have yet to be able to play it, and I'm very upset about that.
So is it because you love Dune so much?
I liked Dune. I don't know if I'd go that far. But if you're a patron of the show, you can hear Judge Rob rank all of the Dune books on an extra special patron special. That's a plug. I like Dune, but I just think it's kind of funny because it's so obviously a Dune reference to Sandworm Convergence, and of course Greater Sandworm, the greatest of all sandworms. I just love when Magic throws in nods to other kind of nerd culture icons, so that was kind of cool to see. And I get to shout, "Let the spice flow!" whenever I see it, so I'm really excited for that to happen on coverage.
Who doesn't want a 7-7
every end step? Let me ask you that. Who? Nobody, Ben. Nobody.
But yeah, it's that card is really powerful if it ever hits play, and it generally has trouble hitting play if you don't have a lot of ways of getting to 8 mana really quickly. And so there's Gift of Paradise.
Yeah.
There's the Naga Vitalist. I think there's another, like, those are all really, really good ways of kind of like getting there. And you can afford to play more colors with those cards.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Is there any other decks that you wanted to talk about in draft at all that are kind of near and dear to your heart at this point in time?
I mean, I think draft is just, it's all sweet. I mean, every deck is really cool. I think the one thing that is really interesting about Amaket draft compared to the previous draft formats is that there are some very, very fast decks, like really like all about 1 and 2 drops and cartouches and trials and stuff like that. And
can I tell you something? Pause. Yes. This is today. Somebody, I had an exemplar of strength and a cartouche of strength. And I played, I was like, can't lose, exemplar turn 2 and then cartouche of strength. Turns out my opponent had the exact same turn 2 and 3 play. And they were on the play, so I got in that scenario. So yeah, that's an example of a really fast start that you're like, there is absolutely no way I'm coming back from this. Anyway, sorry, continue.
No. But actually, I mean, some of the aggressive decks, it really depends who gets the early start, who goes first, and that's really important. But that's on one end, and you know, the decks like red white, red black, white green, they're all kind of like these 1 and 2 drop decks. And it goes all the way to the blue-green decks that are really slow, or the blue-black decks, which are really, really controlly, or the blue-red decks, which is kind of like about cycling and going to the late game. It's funny that like both of these strategies, both ends of the spectrum, are really, really quite viable, and they're totally different. They play differently. It's really cool Magic. I mean, I've had some amazing games. I mean, I had one game where I was playing blue-red, and I had this complete another brawl with another blue green deck who he played Sandwind Convergence. I stole it with Lake Claim. He played Nissa. I cast like my Nubian Drake. It was just a great game, great Magic, really, really interesting, and like it's what you hope all draft formats to be.
Do you think that this could end up being one of the all-time great draft formats?
I mean, a lot of people have, you know, within the first couple weeks have said that some people have even said it's the best draft format of all time. I don't know if that's quite that yet for me, but it's very easy to see why people think that. I think there are a lot of mechanics. I think cycling is a great mechanic for like to make sure that there's a lot of play in the game. I mean, you have a card that's like, oh, it's good early, and if I draw it late, I can cycle it. Or vice versa, a card that's good late and I draw early and I can cycle it.
Do you think cycling is a mechanic that should be evergreen?
I think it could be, though I don't know if it would actually be that cool when it gets evergreen. I think it's cool when it's the flavor of you know, the month or the set. Yes, I think there could be some cards. I mean, like Scry has helped make the variance a little bit lower than, you know, to just lessen the variance in Magic games. But I think overall, it doesn't need to be. I mean, I think it should be repeated a lot. It should probably come back every, you know, 3 or 4 blocks. But I don't think it needs to be an evergreen mechanic. And, I mean, I think there are just so many interesting mechanics in Magic that you don't need to go back to the world too often. I mean, sure, you've got Flying and Trample, Menace, those kind of things are really good evergreen ones. But I don't think you need too many of those.
Okay, that's just my question at the moment. Like, because I know some people disagree and think that it should be an evergreen mechanic. So I'm really interested to hear people's thoughts on it. So thanks for sharing.
Yeah. No problem.
Everybody, get out there and tweet at MTAcast if you want to share your particular favorite deck of the moment in draft. You can send us screenshots. I love to see what other people are building. Anything super sweet happens to you, post it on Twitter at MTAcast. We'd love to know. It feeds me. Your draft pictures feed me. All right, everybody. It's time for Flavor Text Theater, featuring Ben Seck, our special guest, the Ben Seck, no less. I'm going to crack this booster of Amonkhet, and I'm going to quiz Ben, since I'm trying to memorize all the cards in the set exactly and precisely, and Kitty is playing with my microphone. Anyway, he bragged to me that he already knows them all without having to sit down and study, so we're going to see how well he does on this quiz of knowing all the cards in Amonkhet, and see if he'll be destroyed by his own hubris. All right, here we go.
I hope you don't open like an invocation, because it's gonna be tough for those ones.
So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna show Ben the art, and he's gonna have to tell me all of the different aspects of the card. You can play along at home too if you're watching this on YouTube, youtube.com/mtacast, and pause the video when I hold up the card and see how well you do, because it actually does help you quite a lot in playing draft and sealed to know the cards that well just by glancing at the art. It'll make you a better player in the long run in the format. So we're gonna start at the back of the pack and work our way up to the front, keeping in mind that all of these cards will go into our May drawing for a patron who has been a patron of the show for any amount of time. So even if you're a new patron this month, you're entered for a chance to win. Okay, I'm going to hold this up.
For the podcast listeners, I'm going to describe the art
okay.
as well.
Okay, perfect. Okay. So if you're listening, you will not be left out. Oops, on the fun. There it is.
Okay, it looks like a blue explosion that I can't understand what the art is trying to do.
It's like a face coming out of a sarcophagus, like a misty face.
Okay, my
it's definitely
guess
a blue card.
Okay, after I said it, I believe it's compelling argument. It's blue and one. It's an instant. It's like target player puts the top 5 cards of his or her library into the graveyard, and it has cycling for 1 blue.
It's a sorcery, but everything else you got right.
Oh, geez, sorcery, okay.
Okay, I'll give you half a point. I'm going to mark down your points here. You've got 0.5, okay?
Half a point.
Half a point. All right, here's the next one, this little buddy. He was runner-up for cutest card. Red card.
It's a lizard that is his mouth open like this.
Accurate.
And he's sitting on a rock. Okay, I know. This card is called Thresher Lizard. It is 1 red and 2. It's a 3/2. And whenever, like you, as in the control of Thresher Lizard, has 1 or no cards in hand, it gets +1/+2, making it 4/4.
Yes, indeed. 100% correct. You get a point. Yeah. Marking it down.
1 point. What can I trade these points for?
High fives, of course. High fives.
Okay.
1.5 fives. This is a white card here. White common.
Oh, okay. So I know exactly what this does, but I forget its name.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. So I'm going to...
This guy is holding a spear, by the way. It's somebody holding a spear ready to fight.
Yeah, it's a white card guy holding a spear.
That's a clue.
I think it's... this is probably the wrong name. Tar Crop Skirmisher? No, that doesn't sound right.
So here's the thing in this set... For everybody who doesn't have to memorize it, there's like 3 different crop things. There's Ret Crop, Ta Crop, and...
On Crop.
And no, not on. Nef Crop. So... and On Crop. So there's 4.
Yeah.
You're right. Okay. So this guy is Ret Crop, Spearmaster. Spearmaster.
Okay, so so the name I've got totally wrong, but I didn't know it was a crop cut, I guess. Anyway.
you don't get any bonus points for that. Stop fishing.
It's 1 white and 2 for a 3/1. And 1 writ crop spearmaster attacks, you may exert him. If you do, it gets +1 power and first strike until end of turn.
All right, very good. No points.
No points?
No, you didn't get the name right. You got to get these 100% right.
So,
okay.
So hard.
All right, what's this fellow? It's a green card.
Yeah, okay. So it looks like a naga. It's one of the cobra naga, and he's screaming out at the heavens.
He's shedding his skin.
Yes, that's right. And actually, he's also shedding his weakness.
Very good.
That's the name of the card. Shed weakness. 1 green, instant. You may remove, target creature, you can remove a -1/-1 counter, and it also gets +2/+2.
Yep, that is correct. You'll get a point. All right, this next card, this one is kind of easy for me to remember for some reason. It's a black card.
Yes, his name is, this guy's in the desert. He's got some, scarf action.
He's got some what?
Scarf. He's wearing a scarf.
Oh, scarf action. Yeah. He's wearing a scarf and like a turban blowing in the wind in the desert.
That's right. Anyway, this is another one where I think I know half the name of it. It's Doomed Traveler, I think. Yes. That's my guess.
Isn't that an old card?
It's Doomed.
Doomed Dissenter.
Doomed Dissenter. Ah! I said I got half the name.
You did.
Anyway, 1 black and 1. It's a 1/1 creature. And when Doomed Dissenter dies, you get a 2/2 zombie token.
Okay, I'll give you half point for that. Half point, because you got it right. Other than that, okay, how about this one right here? It's a handy dandy little card. It's green.
Okay. It's a guy who's firing an arrow at some Avon creature, I think.
Yep.
It's green. I believe it's called Sting Shot.
Yes.
It's 1 green, instant. Target creature with flying gets -3/-1/-1 counters.
Yep.
And it cycles for 2.
Very good. You nailed that one. Congratulations. Well done. Oh, here's an easy one for you. It's a red card.
Yes. Look, it's...
It's a ball of flames.
Yes, he's a guy who's all in flames. It's a reprint. 1 red magma spray, instant. Deal 2 damage to target creature. If that creature dies this turn, exile it.
Very good. Gets a point. This little card, which I had in my deck when I was playing the Streamer Showdown, is white.
Okay, so it's
like
jackal
a little parade.
Guys. Yeah, jackal guys taking some mummies out for a walk.
Remember to always take your mummy for a walk. That's what they say.
That's right. The card is Inuketra's Name. 1 white and 1 instant. Your creatures get +1/+1. Unless they're zombies and they get +2/+1 instead.
Yes, congratulations. You're now up to 6 points. 6 points.
Yeah,
ooh, 6 points. This card I see everywhere.
Okay. This guy is one of those Avon dudes. And he's in front of a waterfall. And he's got a
blue card.
Spear and stuff. Avon Initiate. 1 blue and 3. Summon bird warrior. Sorry, creature bird warrior.
Yep.
And it's a 3/2
flyer.
You really
are an old player.
Yeah, and it's summon.
Sick birds.
3/2 flyer. And it has embalmed blue and 6.
Yes. All right, marking it down. 7 points. 7 points. Okay. Oh, here we have a land.
A land. It looks like there's kind of a cave and they're all rainbowy. It's called Painted Bluffs. That's what I do with poker. I paint my bluffs. That doesn't make any sense. But it's a desert.
Yes.
Land desert. And you can pay one and tap it, and you can add a mana of any color.
Correct. Well done. You're doing very well. I'm giving you a hard time, okay. But you're doing very well. Here's a tough one, potentially. It is an artifact.
Yes. I believe, so it looks like a gate.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it might be headed to the afterlife.
That's right.
So it's called Gate to the Afterlife.
The reason this is bad, this like you, because nobody will ever play this card. It's hard to remember.
Yeah. So it's costs 3. And whenever a non-token creature goes to the graveyard, you gain 1 life. Also,
whenever it dies, that's fine. I'll accept your answer.
Yeah, sorry. When they die, it goes. You gain 1 life. Also, you may draw a card. If you do, you have to discard a card.
Correct.
So that's the main
relevant
text
also, right now.
It has another piece of text that's like 2, and you can sack the gate, and you can search for a card that doesn't exist.
God, Pharaoh's gift. Yeah.
That's right. God-Pharaoh's gift. So that's probably going to come out in the next set.
Hour of Devastation.
Hour of Devastation.
Ooh, here's a little card that is relevant to my interests.
Yeah, that's right. Because you love the Boggles.
It's green.
So it looks like it's green. It has a Cleopatra kind of lady. She's got like those kind of Egyptian bangs.
And
I don't know.
She's got a ghost person behind her with like
that's
a
right.
hammer.
So this is the best M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yes.
6 cents.
It's so funny because the Happening is in this set too, Haze of Pollen.
Whoa. That's right. It was all the plants all along. All along.
God, don't remind me.
But this card is 1 green. It's an enchantment aura. Whenever enchanted creature gets, whenever this deals combat damage, draw a card.
Indeed. It says you may draw a card, but I think you're probably gonna. All right. How about this reprint? It's a black card.
Yeah. So it looks like a kind of a zombie dude, and he's trying to do something to some grave-like things in the desert.
He's trying to do something to a grave-like thing in the desert. He's hauling another, he's hauling a zombie behind him.
Well, ironically, he's also a zombie.
He is.
He's a grave digger. He ain't no broke. No, it's fine.
What's he do?
He is black and 3. He's a 2/2 zombie. And when he comes into play, when he enters the battlefield, he will return a creature card from your graveyard to your hand.
Very good. Very good. Okay, we have 1 last card here. It is our rare.
Oh, this is a tough one.
Here it is.
Oh, we just talked about this
card.
We
did. It's a black card. Liliana is parting a sea of zombies.
That's right. She is the Moses of zombies.
She really is.
So it's black 3, Liliana's mastery. It's not like the other masteries from the last set, but...
No.
It's an enchantment. When it comes into play... Oh, sorry, when it enters the battlefield... You get 2/2 zombies, and all zombies get +1/+1.
Fabulous. Well done. You end that pack with a score of 5, 10, 12 out of 15.
Yeah, those names got me.
That's okay. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Well done. I'm going to add these cards to the made drawing. So head on over to patreon.com if you want to become a patron and get a chance at winning these cards. I'm going to make myself a little note that these are for the May winner right there. Yeah, Liliana's Mastery, who knows, might show up in a zombie deck. Or if you've been zombie deck of any kind, definitely put that card in it. It'll be pretty good. Wonderful playing Flavor Text Theater with you, Ben. High five.
It was great. Bam.
So when Ben was on the show before, we had kind of a little mini prothering with him where we talked about his very first pro tour. It's hilarious, by the way. Definitely go back and listen to our GP San Jose Pajama Party episode because it is very funny. But I wanted to give you the chance to tell any other great Magic stories that you have from your long history with the game.
I have a pretty cool one. Goes pretty far into the depths of Magic history, but it involves a player that's probably considered one of the best of all time.
Most people just call me Maria.
You're going to be the best.
That's right.
there used to be a tournament called the Magic Invitational. I don't know if you're familiar with this tournament, Maria.
No.
Have you heard it before? So what you've probably seen the aftermath of some of these cards.
I've seen aftermath on cards. Am I right? Hey-o! Yes. I just hailed so hard I unplugged my own headphones. So don't tell your story until I plug these back in because I need to hear it. Okay, go.
Okay. So back in the day, they had this tournament and they used to invite some of the most famous players at the time to a location around the world, and it's, I think, 16 players, and they would play a tournament using all sorts of wacky formats, and the winner of the tournament
like a chaos draft or what?
Oh, no. Some of them were just like normal, like vintage, but some of them were really weird. They would be a set that only Mark Rosewater had like just made for this tournament. He would write out cards for this tournament.
What?
Or sometimes they do things like Duplicate Limited. I don't know if anyone's played Duplicate Limited. It's like every player gets exactly the same seal pool and then they have to build decks out of it.
Whoa, that's crazy.
So it had all sorts of wacky formats. One of the fun things actually, they had a part of it called Auction of the People. Auction of the People had they had a theme letters of the alphabet. And so they get people submitting decks, like players like you and me. Basically, you could submit a deck list that had to start, every card had to start with the same letter.
This is awesome. And why don't we do this anymore?
I think it was pretty cool. But what would happen is then they'd get all the 26 decks in the case of the letter competition, and they would draft the decks. But they would draft them by auctioning them. So what you auction, instead of money, which you normally in an auction, you actually bid life and starting cards in your hand. So if you thought the deck was really good, you would actually you could bid 5 cards, 15 life. So you'd start with 5 cards in your hand, you'd have to start with 15 life.
This is crazy.
This was a super fun tournament. It's kind of meant to be a promotional tournament where people were just having a lot of fun, but it involved the best players in the game doing this tournament. And the thing you get if you win the tournament is your face on a card. So this is how we got cards like Snapcaster Mage.
I see.
Shadow Mage Infiltrator. All these cards that why is Dark Confident Bob Maher? Well, it's because he actually won this event, one of these events, and he was able to design a card. So he gets to design a card and his face was on a card. So for the first probably dozen years of Magic's history, there was kind of these Magic players' faces in decks, on cards. And so it was actually a really fun tournament.
That's so cool.
I mean, a lot of people really would love for these tournaments to come back again. I think they're really cool. They're show the inventiveness of the players and the designers. I think it was a really, really cool event. But to get back to the story.
Yes.
One year they had it in Sydney. And this is before they had Pro Tour was in Sydney last year. But way before that, they actually decided to highlight Sydney as a place to play Magic. And I used to live in Sydney, for those who have forgotten. And so all the pro players, these 16 pro players, had come to Sydney. And at the time, I basically was kind of this semi-pro Magic player, but I didn't really I wasn't able to go to too many Pro Tours because it's so expensive. You didn't get a flight back then. You actually had to pay for your own flights from Australia to go to Pro Tours, and you couldn't really afford that. But anyway, all the players came to Sydney, and I knew a couple of them. I actually like got to know a lot of them. I took them around Sydney. I showed them like, you know, places to go, places to eat. We had a great time. But one of the things that happened as part of that tournament is they had this vintage like section of the event. And vintage, as a lot of you know, involves a lot of expensive cards, like Lotuses, Moxes, like Ancestral Recall, Library of Alexandria. Anyway, like all the most kind of pricey cards in the game. And a lot of players didn't have access to these cards. But I was like, you know, pretty well connected in the Sydney Magic community. And I knew a lot of players who had vintage cards. So I actually was able to kind of like, I had some of my own. I had a lot of friends I could borrow from. And I actually was able to supply a lot of the players at that event with these cards. And, you know, there were, you know, we gotten to know each other. And so they're very, very kind of grateful for, you know, me being able to lend them cards and take them around and all sorts of that. So I became good friends, and all of them have been like friends to these days, like where I really got to know like John Finkel, Kai Boudet, like Ben Rubin, a lot of the pros and Hall of Famers that, and it's kind of how I know a lot of them. And so I've really kept those friendships to this day. Anyway, flash forward a year after, okay, this is the event happens. John Finkel wins that one, and it's a year after, and they're going to run the Magic Invitational again. This time, the event is in an even more exotic place than Australia. It's in Cape Town, South Africa. So this is crazy. It's like they've never done it.
That's the one and only, right?
Yep, it's the only one. It was just a really, really cool event. And yet again, they were having a vintage-like part of the game, the tournament. They required, like, you know, expensive cards like Lotuses or Boxes. So one of the players that I lent cards to in Sydney, Kai Boudet, said, hey, you know, kind of jokingly, hey, you know, are you going to lend me cards again for this event? He, you know, said that over the internet. And I was like, you know, well, I would if you could fly me there. And I said it as a joke, basically, because, you know, there's no way they're just going to fly me from Sydney to South Africa. And he said, yes. He just said it was when Kai was doing really well. We became good friends. He was like, you know what? I'll fly you there if you can bring the cards for me. And so I said, okay, no problem. I didn't really have a job I needed to be at the kind of like on a daily basis. And so I basically got the cards that he needed. And we'd made a kind of like it. I basically said I couldn't go unless he flew me. And so we made a deal. So he flew me over there. The Invitational always had a Grand Prix associated with it. So he said, you can go and play in the Grand Prix. And any money you happen to make at the Grand Prix, you can pay me back. But if you don't make any money at the Grand Prix, the trip's on me. So I said, okay. Sounds great to me. I get a free trip to South Africa, a free Grand Prix to play in. So he flies me over there. I give him cards. I'm crashing in his hotel room that he got for the event. So, you know, we have a great time. We go on a safari. We go all around. Cool. Cape Town. It was like one of the best trips of my life. But so the funny thing is, so I play in the Grand Prix. And for those who might know, I actually win the Grand Prix that he flies me all the way to.
This is insane.
And as it turns out, I mean, winning Grand Prix it's worth a reasonable amount, but it's worth probably about like just a little over kind of the actual trip itself. So, you know, I basically kind of go there, Kai gets his money back. But also Kai wins the Invitational. So that's what the – so – both people who stayed in this hotel room happened to win the tournament. But there's a couple little, you know, cool things that happened at this tournament as a result. So South Africa, there wasn't a lot of, like, magic being played, and there's not a lot of infrastructure about, like, paying people out. So because you obviously win money as part of winning the Grand Prix. So instead of usually – the Wizards of the Coast usually send checks – to the players. And so at this time, because there was no infrastructure, the tour organizer said, well, it's going to be hard for us to pay you in Australia. But what I do have, I have the prize money in cash up in the hotel room.
What?
So he said, do you mind getting paid in cash? And I was like, why not? I mean, you know, I could just give it all to Kai, whatever. It's like, so we go up to the tournament organizer's hotel room. He goes to the hotel safe, takes it out, counts out the money in South African rand. Now, South African rand is like it's the currency of South Africa, but it's like eight times the amount that it is in American dollars. So, you know, what is usually, you know, about $3,000 was like $20,000 in South African rand. And so he counts it out, gives me a suitcase full of the cash, and like pays it up to me. So now I've won the Grand Prix. I've gotten paid in cash, which I believe has never happened in Grand Prix history. And I walk away with the cash. Another part that's even kind of funnier is that the tournament was run in kind of a hotel casino. And so I walk out with the money. I walk back to where all the players are. We're hanging out, you know, we're kind of celebrating, getting some drinks. People are kind of on the blackjack table. And they said, well, you won. You have cash. You're going to play some blackjack? And so it's like, okay, whatever. We're all like laughing. And I proceed to actually double the amount that I won at the Grand Prix at the blackjack table.
Are you serious?
So it was enough to basically pay back Kai and then win the Grand Prix again. So I was like, it was a crazy, crazy story that like involved a million things that are so unlikely. And still to this day, it's like one of the best magic memories I've ever had.
That is incredible. Thank you so much for sharing. That's our show. Thank you so much for listening. And thanks, of course, to our wonderful and esteemed guest, the Ben Sek. I hope you had a good time, Ben.
I had a great time. It was fun. I'll do it again.
And thank you to everybody who's a listener in support of the show on Patreon. Remember to head over to patreon.com/mtacast and become a member of our prestigious Less Than 1% Club for as little as $1 an episode. If the show gives you anything that you enjoy or value from week to week, for example, if you would have a sad face emoji if it didn't come out next month, that might be a sign that you should throw $1. Ben's doing a great example of sad face emoji, $1 at us an episode, and it would mean the world to us to be able to do our job more and better for you. And once again, thanks to our sponsor, cardkingdom.com/mtacast. Card Kingdom, the only place that I want to buy magic cards, and that is my literal endorsement because I love that place and they've been fantastic to us and they're fantastic to all of their customers. Ben, as we say goodbye and end to episode 223 of Magic the Amateuring, can you leave us with some parting words of wisdom that have guided you through your magic career, as storied as it has been?
I mean, I think winning isn't everything with magic. I think like you should enjoy the fact that we like are playing a game that just always changes. It's always fun. For every game, you have an opponent who's on the other side who wants to have fun as well. So make sure that don't be too salty. Don't be too kind of, you know, sad about like getting mana screwed. Like there's always the next game. Enjoy Magic. I mean, I've enjoyed Magic for over 20 years. It's the best game in the world. I wouldn't trade any of those games for anything else. And so, just enjoy every game and be happy about it.
Thought you were going to say a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
Well, I mean, I could say that too. But
which, like, if you think about it with embalm, like the bush is your graveyard, right? And in your bird in your hand is the bird you're holding in your hand. Did I just blow your mind?
Yeah, I mean, yes, but I'd really like a bird in the hand because it could be a chicken wing, and I love wings.
All right, let's go eat.